On the line, we've got Rick Barker, who's a former Member of Parliament for Tukituki and, amongst other things, a former senior whip of the Labor government, Labor Party, Labor government, and also former Minister of Internal Affairs, Veteran Affairs, and a number of other portfolios. Rick, the reason that I wanted to have a cordial to you today is the sense of growing violence towards members of Parliament. You've been out of Parliament for a little while now. Was this a thing that happened in your day, and how did you used to handle it?
Well, there's always been a bit of angst and grubbiness directed at the establishment, but it was kind of a controlled rage. I mean, we've had lots of big protests, Springbok tour, Vietnam War, but there was it was rage and disagreement, but it was a controlled anger. People never crossed the line. People never said really despicable things. Never used extreme language like genocide, which I see tossed around today. And I'm just appalled by this. Do these people not realise what genocide is? The systematic gassing of 6 million Jews in Poland and Germany? That's what genocide is. So they've gone to extremes. And the sense of anger, which is big, and uncontrolled anger, which is what really worries me. I hadn't until recent years ever seen anybody as a member of Parliament, apart from the President of the United States shot, but we've had two MPs in Britain killed. This is unthinkable. The Brits never did this. We've got threats against senators in the US, again, unthinkable. And on one occasion, a threat by a by a congressman against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This is a language style. Now, people pick up on this and they amplify it. So if the respected leaders are doing these things, then the ordinary member of the public feel validated, unleashed to go and do more.
Well,
and so it just circles around and around and gets stronger and stronger.
Well, recently we've seen what I would describe at a low level rant, but quite a vitriol of hate towards a local member of Parliament from Wairarapa. And it's very interesting, the person who was spitting the venomous was John Ansell. And our listeners, and you, Rick, will remember that John Ansell was very very much a member of the, very active in the National Party not that long ago, and he was behind the Don Brash's Iwi Kiwi. But what we saw yesterday was taking it up to a different level. In terms of across the political spectrum, Rick, when that occurs, surely it's beholding upon all political leaders across the political hue to denounce this.
Oh, that's true. Now, the other thing too, Shane, is that we've forgotten our history. During the First and Second World War, countries were at each other. They went to extremes. But after the loss of millions of people and huge devastation, the world basically said, we can't afford to be the extreme anymore. We have to come to the centre. We have to work together. We have to find ways of getting on. But what we've seen in the last few decades is the world moving back to extremes. Fundamental Christians, fundamental Muslims, fundamental Hindus in India now. Everybody is moving to the fringes. And if you aren't on the fringe, then you're not having influence. So the centre is being vacated for extremes. And this worries me deeply.
We've got COVID. We've had the vaccinations. We've had mandates. We've got three waters going on at the moment. We've had the discussion around He Puapua. Rick, do you see that it's a blimp in our history, a blimp in our time, or do you think that we've got some big issues that will take us quite a lot of time to work things out?
I think it will take some time to work things out, but the problem here is for the majority of New Zealanders, they are just as they've always been. Good to their neighbours, work in the kindergartens, do work around the school, help in the community, do all those good things. The majority are really good. The problem we've got is a growing small minority who are moving to the extremes. They're on social media, talking to themselves, reflecting back and forth. These thoughts go round and round and round. and they're not engaged in the conversation like you would have had prior to social media. If you're talking about these extremes prior to social media, it would have been in a workplace, large freezing works, whatever it was. And the people around you would have moderated the views and said, well, that's not right, you can't agree with that. But today, people get onto social media and they find out those who think like them. And their thoughts go around and around in a track. And it's a little bit like how we humans learn. As you said, no, we learn, do something once, we do it twice, and we go and do it until it gets imprinted on our brain. And this is where this 10,000 hours come from. You want to become expert at something, 10,000 hours of doing the same thing. The trouble is, people are doing this, but not for positive reasons. People are doing this for negative reasons. So these negative thoughts are going around, they're reinforcing each other, and in doing so, they're moving these groups to the extreme. Eventually, one of them will break. And this is where I do have every sympathy with David Fisher's column recently. He put into words what I'd been thinking for some weeks. Somebody, somewhere, is going to snap, and it's going to be a terrible event. I just have this uneasy feeling about it.
See, Rick, my view is that these things ratchet up. From it's okay to be white. You know, it was only just before the election last year that the leader of the opposition, used that mantra. It's okay to be white, and you know, on the surface of things, you could say, "Well, she meant nothing by that," and you know, she's just promoting her particular perspective. But others view it quite differently, don't they? And then it gets ramped up. So that's the responsibility I'm talking about in terms of our political leaders, right?
Oh, I agree with that. So what she was doing was she was what they call dog whistling, yes, and saying it's okay to be white. And the extremists out there say, ah, she means me. I'm a white. I want whites to be a white nation. I want to have white fundamentalism. I want to have white this, white that. And so it's a terrible sound, actually. It's just like when Trump said, Proud Boys stand easy. They said, oh, that's great. He's talking to us, you know. Not stand back, not quit, stand easy. He's telling us to stand easy and be prepared to move, which they did. January 6th, it was a dog whistle to them. Now, these people know what they do. They know that they're firing these people up. They know that reinforcing bad thoughts. And you can but only worry about this. Be deeply concerned that something's going to break somewhere.
So, Rick, what about the responsibility and how do we modify? Because the platform for this is often social media. And, you know, there's this thing called keyboard warriors that you would write something you would never dare say to someone's face. Is there a responsibility in terms of the Facebooks, in terms of the Twitters, in terms of the Insta? Now we've got Telegram. Those type of platforms, is there a responsibility for them to modify it, to modify this behaviour? And if they don't, how can the government do this?
Well, I think there is a responsibility. I think we should hold them to account for it. I mean, the fact that Facebook streamed live the mosque massacre in Christchurch, they claim that, oh, we were just the medium, we weren't the message. But the fact is, as Marshall McLuhan, the great philosopher, said, the medium is the message.
Also,
so they were the message. And so they should have been, in my view, prosecuted for it and held account for the fact that they transferred that terrible scene, ugly, brutal scene around the world.
But also, Rick, I'm a columnist. You're a columnist. You write from time to time. You know, if you publish something knowingly untrue, at best, you'll get a correction. If you publish something where you know it's hurtful or it's defamatory in nature, then you're gonna suffer financial consequences, but more importantly, the New Zealand Herald or the local Hawke's Bay paper is going to suffer a financial penalty. Is that part of the answer?
Well, that's part of the answer, but haven't we lost our moral compass here? Mm. Wasn't there a time when if you said something wrong and defamatory against a person, you said, look, I'm sorry, mate, I take that back, it was my mistake, I was wrong. What's wrong with that? That's where it should start from. We should be having a society where we're respectful of everybody and we do the right thing. And we should be, as a society, putting pressure on those who don't. And we should be holding Facebook to account in every way. Because I just worry with Facebook, all it'll do is say that, oh, well, that's the price of doing business. That's all I'll say. Because if it gets some more money, what the hell? Those callous people. Just Zuckerberg knows what he's doing. He knows the social distress he's causing. He knows that, for example, Instagram, with its glamorization of the body, is causing enormous stress to young women all over the world. He knows the consequence of that. His psychologists tell him, but it's profitable, see? And we put money and dollars up on a pedestal and worship these gods about how wonderful it is for their money. Like Bezos, a billionaire, all the expense of minimum wage workers, shoots himself into space, at great expense to the environment, carbon burned up everywhere, and he says, I'm a space veteran now. Well, we should condemn him for it. We shouldn't praise him. We shouldn't glorify him. We said, well, that's a terrible thing to do.
Well, yeah. You know what, Rick? I heard someone say on the radio yesterday, they said, you know, there's been people, the young generation are saying, well, if you really save for your house, you can get there and stop spending money on lattes and you'll be able to afford your house, which is a total misnomer, you know?
In terms of
the way in which housing property prices are going, Rick. But the other thing is that the converse of that is that if you can afford a yacht or super yacht, or you can afford your own spaceship, surely you can afford to pay your workers minimum wage.
Oh, I'll pay them well. Oh, that's right. I think one of the about the houses. Look, a house in Napier recently, over a year, earned more than someone on the minimum wage working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, without a break, without a sleep. Well, who can compete with that? That, I think, is the perfect argument why we should have had a capital gains tax. And as for the super wealthy, the first thing I'd like them to do is to pay their tax. That would be a good thing, just pay your tax like everybody else pays. That would be a really good start.
Because see, this here's the thing, isn't it, Rick? If you're a countdown worker, every dollar you earn over, I think it's $7,000 to $8,000, you'll have to, and you earn under a certain amount, you have to pay tax. But if you sell your shares, not 1 cent in tax.
That's right.
If you sell your house, not one cent in tax.
That's right. And so what, for example, Elon Musk does, like many of them, he lives a lavish lifestyle by borrowing against the value of his company. And so as his shares goes up, he sells some shares and pays off his loan. So he never actually claims that he has an income. He just has debts. Well, if you're a minimum wage worker flipping burgers in Burger King, you can't go to the bank and say, give me 50 grand. I want to have this as a loan so I can work it off. You can't. And what the government does is says, oh, you're earning money at Burger King. You've got an income. You're on a wage. Mr. Burger King, take money out of this guy's pay packet and give it to us. See, the wealthy live a different lifestyle. But we have been sucked in to saying this is a great thing and all of us trying to aspire to that. Well, the world cannot all be Bezos of Amazon. Let's be clear about that. So we have let the rhetoric get turned around by the media and other institutions so that they don't pay their fair share of tax. They should do that. First thing they should do. And what they do is they then run around saying, oh, we're great philanthropists. We're going to give millions for this and millions for that. Well, we should say, well, first thing you should do, pay your tax. Once you pay your tax, then give you millions.
So, Rick, if I can pivot for a minute, please, and talk about a couple of other quickfire issues, Rick. There's a lot of talk and controversial talk about and kōrero about Three Waters. Rick.
Three Waters. Yep.
Let's put aside the politics of the issue. How can local councils throughout Aotearoa cover the costs without putting rates up substantially in terms of the infrastructural investment in our stormwater, and our wastewater, and our drinking water that we know is needed? Is it with that? Not talking about the politics of the day, but just in terms of the general position, how can they do that? Is it possible?
Well, it is possible, but let's say that listed in the last 100 years, councils have never had the political courage to put up rates to pay for the infrastructure the way they should have. they've always responded to emergencies and crises. I mean, here in Hastings, we had a mayor who was a plumber who argued that it was great that they had such low rates and low rate increases, and they never fixed a pipe underground for decades. So all happened was future generations had to pay for the lack of maintenance that was done. And so it goes on. The thing I feel about it is, firstly, there's a couple of myths that have been said. One of them is that they're stealing the assets. Well, outside my house is a water pipe and a sewer pipe and a stormwater pipe, and they'll be there before the changes and they'll be afterwards. No one's going to come along and steal them. They're there. The secondly is they're just going to shift from one balance sheet to another. So it's not a question of theft. I think the important question here is, what's the most affordable model? So this is about economic efficiency. And I think we should be concerned about this. So what is going to be the, rather than what's in the best interest of the council, what is in the best interest of the ratepayer? So work that out. And it should be just a simple conversation and someone work out what it means.
Rick, as a ratepayer and as someone that's not only involved in regional council but involved in treaty settlements, there's also talk that there's a Māori takeover as a result of Three Waters. But the reality, it's a co-governance model at best, isn't it? Ownership still stays in the public interest.
Oh, yeah, as you saw in the public, there's no question about that. But I have this view about it. I think having Māori involved in these decisions is a good thing. I've always felt that there's plenty of room around the table for one or two more to have a view. And if we all come together and agree on an outcome, well, that's great. I just don't understand why some people should be shoved out of these decisions. Let's face it, Māori have been underrepresented at local government level for 150 years. And we should welcome their involvement and their engagement. We need all of us together to have the discussion, to work out what's the best interest of all of us, and we should celebrate that as a plus, not a negative.
So, Rick, just finally, we had a poll come out this week, TVNZ poll, and pretty much stayed the same in comparison with the last poll that TVNZ put out. Labor dropped 2, National dropped 1, Greens are up 1. So basically, that centre left, right, the numbers are pretty much the same. Seems that certainly that ACT are eating into National Party's numbers. 3 quick questions: the biggest winner out of this poll?
I would say Labor. They've gone through a really, really tough time and still be sitting on 41-42%. They're doing okay. It's a pretty tough time. We've had this long period of lockdown. Auckland is really hurting. Auckland's are hemorrhaging. It's been a really tough time, and they've stayed the course. So I would expect them to go backwards. But so I think they've done pretty well, really. The second winner is ACT. They're really out there to eat National's lunch.
And Rick, you've known this person for probably 40 plus years. I need not mention his name, but I will. We've seen New Zealand First on 3%. Will Winston be back?
Oh, yeah. I had a bet with a very well known broadcaster, head of journalism bureau, that when Winston went out of the house, I said Winston will be back next election. He bet me a bottle of wine he wouldn't be, and Winston's back, and I still haven't got my bottle of wine.
You're simply not prepared to write him off, huh?
Oh, I wouldn't write him off. I think he's going to do very well. If he decides to run, I think he'll be in at about 5.5%.
Okay, that's Rick Barker, regional councillor for Hastings and former member of Parliament for Tukituki. Kia ora, Rick. Thanks for being on the line tonight.
Jane, thanks.